Hello, Podcats. So this episode isn't going to be particularly heavily edited, and I'm going to jump straight in. Things have been a bit hectic mind, and I realised that we've been a bit slow putting things out, so I wanted to make sure that something went out in the next few days for all you loyal listeners. Episode 3 of the Beginner's Guide to the Hero System. Or the Beginner's Podcaster's Guide to the Hero System, whichever you prefer. So far we've covered character points and basic characteristics. So this episode we are going to cover, he says, trying to find his notes. Skills, perks and talents. All three of these are bought through character points, like everything else is in the hero system. And although they sound quite similar-ish, that they are quite distinct entities. So skills are abilities that characters either learn or have trained in. In some cases, they may represent a character's innate knack or talent, but generally, you can think of them as things that you've had to learn to do. Now, most skills cost 3 points to buy a proficiency in them. Some do vary slightly, most notably martial arts, which I might cover separately, because although the mechanics are the same, the way they're bought are slightly different. So there are several types of skills, or should I say the skills are grouped together in several groups to make them easier to manage. So there is agility skills, background skills, combat skills, intellectual skills, and interaction skills. And so most of them are pretty self-explanatory. Interaction is about personal interaction rather than interacting with objects in your environment. So as I say, they cost 3 character points each on the whole. Now, 3 character points buys you a base skill roll of 9 plus the characteristic that affects the skill divided by 5. So for an average human, get a base of 9, their average, you know, normal characteristic is 10 points, so their base skill would be 11. And as in all hero system rolls, you're, apart from damage, you're trying to roll under that level. So then environmental factors come into play on top of that, things that make it easier or harder to perform that skill, effectively, depending on how you want to approach it, either raise or lower your skill level. So if your base is 11 and it's a particularly easy task, you might get a bonus of 3, so you have to roll under 14. Now, you can also take skills as, I'm just looking for the right terminology, as a familiarity. Now, to buy a skill as a familiarity, there, easy for you to say that, costs only 1 character point, but it gives you a base point value of, or base skill roll, sorry, of 8, and that isn't influenced by characteristics. So it does mean you can take a raft of skills that you're okay-ish at, and then later on you can spend all the character points to take them as a full skill, and that 1 point counts towards those. Once you have a full skill, you can then spend additional character points to increase your base value from 9 higher, and it's 2 character points per point. So not particularly expensive. Then now there is a huge raft of skills, whether you, in your game, you know, choose to sort of lump some of them together, because some of them are quite specific. It's obviously up to yourselves. So skill rolls are, as many of the rolls in the hero system, 3d6 under, and you're aiming to get under your target value. As I say, then there is environmental modifiers laid on top of that. But in some cases, you might want to do a skill versus skill contest. Now, the rules and me myself, I would advise against doing that unless it really makes sense. You know, as you're developing a scenario, you will probably decide the modifiers in advance that the characters will get on their skill rolls for doing certain things. But to use the example in the book, or in the rules, should I say, the example they give is someone placing a bomb and someone else trying to disarm it. And you could do that as a skill versus skill contest. So the person who places the bomb would make their skill roll. And the number of points they make the roll by would be minus to the player trying to disarm it. It's a pretty simple system. It's just that if you're using it a lot, you've potentially got a lot more paperwork going on there, which is, you know, I do like a gritty game, but sometimes it can get a little bit too much. So as I say, I would stick with the rules and say, you know, keep it to a minimum if you can. They also have the concept of complementary skills, where one skill can be used to provide a bonus to another, when that makes sense. So, for instance, if the player who was trying to disarm the bomb also had, shall we say, electronics, and it was an electronic timing device on the bomb, they could use that to complement their demolition skill. And the way that works is you decide which is the primary skill and which is the secondary. So in this case, the primary would be demolitions and the secondary would be electronics. You roll the electronics first, and for each 2 points you make that roll by, you get a 1 point bonus on the primary skill. So again, it's a nice mechanic. It means that if you do have a variety of skills, then you know you're being rewarded for that and the creative use of them, which is always good. So that is the skills in a nutshell. I'm not going to go through all the skills, that there are too many. What I will do though is we'll just explain what some of the modifiers are to give you some context, and also what the skill levels are, or how the hero system rates them. So modifiers, I don't think there's going to be anything particularly out of the ordinary here that you wouldn't expect. A routine task for your type of skill could give you a +3 to +5 bonus. Difficult task for your skill would give you -1 to -3. Extremely difficult, -3 to -5. And then there's similar sort of bonuses for, you know, being in the right environment, having really good equipment, or being in the wrong environment, having really bad equipment. And those modifiers range from advantageous ones, +1 to +5, and disadvantageous ones, -1 to -5. So after a while, it doesn't take long to just, you know, do it off the cuff without referencing the table. The range is pretty static, and one is the lower end and 5 is the higher end. It's a fairly easy call to make. So as for how the hero system sort of ranks your base skill level, so they rank a skill roll of 11 as being competent, which is what a normal human will get if they take a skill. And that means that you would be considered to be a qualified person with that skill, the sort of person who would do that as a job. And then if I jump up to level sort of rank 16, that would be considered highly skilled, one of the best people in the world at that particular thing. So Stratus, for instance, in our game, I can't remember his exact value off the top of my head, but he's around that rank with his computer use. He's very, very competent. And 20 is incredibly skilled, which is the highest they have on their table. They describe that as being perhaps the greatest master of that skill in known history. So that gives you some context of what skill levels are. So next is talents. So talents are unusual abilities that some people may possess. Some weird or unusual attributes or skills with a variety of effects. To all intents and purposes, these are like lesser powers with no endurance cost. And we'll get into endurance costing and how that's spent when we get to combat. So the costs of these range. Some of them are stackable, some aren't. But they average out at about 3 points, but they can ramp up to anywhere up to about 15 points for some of the more powerful ones. Now, I don't remember if I've mentioned this before, but as you go through the hero system rules, you will see some powers and talents are marked with either an exclamation mark or a stop sign. And these are hero games' way of saying that these powers or talents could unbalance a game, so you need to be very careful and considerate whether you let players have these. Obviously for NPCs it's more manageable because you're the GM and you know the tone and level of the game, so you can act them appropriately. I would advise, because I've fallen into this trap, you know, to take that guidance seriously, because sometimes on the face of it, it doesn't necessarily look like it might be unbalancing. If it's an innovative player and they can really derail your game potentially if they're of a mind to. I'm very lucky with my players. We've all played together for a very long time. And on the whole, if something isn't working, then they are happy to add extra parameters around what they have to make it slightly more restrictive, or maybe change it completely. And we try and avoid, you know, someone just losing an ability, because that would be, well, lack of consistency. There's a better way of phrasing that. I just can't think of what it is at the moment. So the sort of talents, there are only a dozen or so. So I may as well run through them really, really quickly. Most of them are quite self-explanatory. So there's absolute range sense, which means you can be accurate at judging distances at a glance. Absolute time sense. Ambidexterity, which is the ability to use either hand equally, which isn't so important in the superhero game. Because of the way you're buying your powers, part of your flavour might be that you're using two hands or whatever. It's probably more for the fantasy, if you use these rules for fantasy. Bump of direction, which just means you can tell exactly what direction things are. Combat luck, which is a defensive ability. It'll give you some extra, effectively, armour. Which, the more I think about it, it shouldn't be armour. It should be, in my opinion, should be DCV, which is your defensive combat value. But hey ho, because one of my players has that. Combat sense, which is, for want of better words, blind fighting. Danger sense, which is, well, Spider-Man. And that is one of the ones that can become quite expensive, because the senses are dealt with in quite depth in the hero system. Sound, smell, and other sort of superhuman senses. So if you want your danger sense to be able to span into lots of different perception groups, if you like, that can become quite expensive. Double jointed, which gives you, I believe, some bonuses on some of the sort of athletic-y type skills. Eidetic memory, which is, well, what it is in real life, you know, you don't forget things. Environmental movement, which allows you to move in most environments that would be hampering to other individuals. Lightning calculator, which is being able to do quick mathematical calculations. Lightning reflexes, which is, well, again, what it says on the tin, really. As is light sleep. There's pitch perfect, which is, again, pretty much what it says on the tin. I'm sorry, I'm just, my mind's just got off at a tangent, wondering, would anyone ever take that? Never mind. Resistance, which isn't resistance to, it's more resistance against interrogation, questioning, that sort of thing. It's sort of an additional strength of will. Simulate death, I don't think we need to necessarily say anything like that. Speed reading is the same. Universal translator, which is another one that can become really expensive, which is your ability to understand any form of communication. And that's it for talents, or at least in the 5th edition main rule book. And that leaves, last but not least, perks. So perks are perks. Sorry, that's terrible. So perks are useful resources, items, privileges, contacts a character might have. Again, these are bought. Again, the cost varies, but hovers around the 3-point mark, I would say, as an average, because the costings do fluctuate quite a bit. Again, in our game, Stratus has the money perk, which means the character is wealthier than normal, and you can take degrees of that, and he has quite a high degree of that perk, which for me as a GM is really useful, because it means I don't have to worry too much about the availability of resources for the players, because unless it's particularly outrageous, then that's easily covered by Stratus's perk. But the others are, again, because there aren't that many of them, I may as well whip through them. Is access, which is you have special access to a secured area. anonymity, which means you have there's no official record trail for you at all. Computer link, which means you have some sort of link to, and well, I'm not talking a physical or mental link, just you have access to some sort of computer system that most normal people wouldn't have access to, and people in the position of your character wouldn't normally have access to. Contact, which is, yeah, someone who's a contact. Obviously, someone, you know, presumably you take that contact in something that you would think useful. Deep cover. Character has an elaborate cover identity. Favour, which means someone important owes the character a favour. Follower, which is you have servants or helpers that are loyal to you, though, which is, that's the key thing, is their loyalty, sorry. Fringe benefits, which is a little bit of a catch-all, I think. This character has some level of influence or authority based on their day life, if you like. Money, which we've mentioned. Reputation, which is the character is well known and highly regarded for something. And vehicles or bases. So you could start off with a vehicle or a base. I'm not even going into the rules for that in doing a beginner's guide, because it's something I've never used, so I would have to do quite a bit of reading on that. So all that leaves us right at the edge of covering powers. Really exciting bit. There are a lot of powers, and I'm going to decide whether I try and drill in down into each individual power or whether I skim over the top. I think drilling down into each power, I could possibly do an episode on each one, and there are quite a lot of them, so I might not go down that route, or maybe I could just focus on the ones that are more commonly used, or maybe even focus on the ones that the players have in the main podcast, which might be a way to go. Might even twist their arms into coming in and talking about how they use them. That would be quite good. So thank you very much for listening. Any feedback on this would be greatly appreciated. Go to the website www.champions.co.uk, and there's a form there where you can email us, or if you're less likely to be missed and get a far quicker response, is look up at ChampionsRPG on Twitter and just fire me a question or criticism or suggestions. That would be absolutely fantastic. And just to round off, as cringy as it makes me feel, I do have to plug, if you want to help out the show, help us improve or maybe do more, then please look us up on Patreon. We have a site there as Champions RPG, where you can donate as little as $1 a month. You know, just the price of a cup of coffee a month from all of our listeners would make a huge difference in what we could do. For instance, we could instantly, well, if everyone donated $1 a month, in a few months we could upgrade the two worst mics we have, and after a couple more months, probably upgrade all four mics to headsets that are bordering on being professional level rather than what we can cobble together. Failing that, or as well as that, please leave us a review on iTunes. The more reviews we got, the more it might catch someone's eye, or the more it might sway someone who's already looked at us to give us a try. And at the end of the day, you know, listeners are the thing, you know. The more listeners we have, the more response we get. For me, and I confess I am the one who does most of the donkey work on the show, just keeps levels of enthusiasm up no end. You know, I'm not afraid to say that our listenership since Christmas has been pretty steady. More than I ever thought we'd get. But still pretty modest. And to see just a jump in 10 or 20 listeners would be a massive, massive thing for us. And to see that sort of increase month on month would be astronomical. And I can't tell you how much difference it makes to me when I have to sit down and spend 15, 20 hours editing an episode. I do enjoy the process on the whole, but sometimes when I have little free time and all that, it can be a real, feel a bit of a grind, and last thing I want this to become is laborious for me. So hopefully, fingers crossed, as long as I don't hit any problems, we should have an episode of the main storyline out in a week or so, and that will be the end of our season one. So I do want to try and make sure it's fairly polished. We may have a very short hiatus between season two, until season two. But if we do, it'll only be a couple of weeks. We have the audio. It's just a matter of editing, et cetera, again. And I'm hoping in season two we will get another little cameo guest role from one of the other great UK podcasts out there. When we get that all sorted and edited in, I'll announce who they are. So thank you for listening, and bye!